Okay, say something again, please.
I haven't done my homework, and people are going to be very angry about it.
Okay. Hello and welcome to the Super Bayern Podcast. It's been a crazy weekend in the world of European football, but especially so for Bayern Munich fans. Somehow, getting knocked out of the Champions League by PSG last week isn't even the worst thing that's happened for Bayern fans in the past week, thanks in part to Hansi Flick's announcement that he hopes to leave the club at the end of the summer, but even more so because of the untimely official announcement that plans have been made to put a much-maligned European Super League into action next season. I'm Benjamin Scott, and I'm here to talk about all of that with my friends Garrett Kerber.
Hello.
Tim Richards.
Hello there.
And, of course, Sebastian Zimmerman.
Hi.
Well, a lot to talk about on today's episode, and I do want to warn you, listener, there is a chance that this one goes a little bit longer than usual just because of the sheer amount of things that have happened in this past week that we feel like we have to address, especially as Bayern fans. And, you know, a lot have happened. Bayern bowed out of the Champions League last week to PSG despite a valiant effort. They beat Wolfsburg on Saturday, a big Bundesliga win, but it was really overshadowed by the fact that Hansi Flick went to the media and announced that he wants out this summer. He doesn't plan to see out his contract. And if that wasn't crazy enough, the next day, a European Super League is announced. And so lots to talk about, but let's start with the Bayern-specific stuff first. And that, of course, being that Hansi Flick wants out. And I've kind of gone through that timeline a little bit, but just as a reminder, you know, Bayern beat Wolfsburg. Flick tells the media that he hopes to leave in the summer. The next day, the Bayern board comes out and said, hey, you know, we didn't want to say anything about this until after the Mainz game in a few weeks. We wanted time to talk about it. The media has been running rampant trying to figure out what's going on here. Who's at fault here? What's the cause? And then yesterday in the press conference ahead of today's game, Hansi Flick refused to even address the topic. He wouldn't answer any related questions in his press conference. And so we're really kind of hanging on to the edge of our seats here, but a lot to talk about. And I do want to start with this question, and I'm going to go ahead and come to Tim first. Is this really a shock, right? Because, you know, the timing is a bit odd, but are you really surprised that Hansi Flick is asking out of his contract this summer, or is this more or less what we kind of expected?
It's both surprising because the situation as a whole is quite surprising. It's not surprising because it's kind of been this vicious rumor that's been going on for like 6 or 7 weeks now. It's strange that he's taken this opportunity to say something in a post-match interview, like after, you know, a game against Wolfsburg, like a fairly innocuous match in the Bundesliga, to say, yeah, I want to go. That's odd. It is surprising. It's very strange. But of course, like if you've been keeping up with anything that's been going on Twitter or social media or the dirt sheets or whatever you want to call it, there's been rumblings of this for quite some time now. There are rumors that he's like repeatedly falling out with Salihamidzic. Like he's not happy with his standing in terms of like the influence that he has over transfers. He doesn't like the transfers that he's been given. He seems to have complained quite a lot. And there's kind of this like two schools of thought, which is, why are you complaining? Everybody has the same situation. And if anything, it's worse at the moment because of COVID. And then the other school of thought is, of course he's complaining. Everybody around him is incompetent. I like to think that there's kind of like a marriage between the two where, this is something that we've spoken about a couple of times, but I don't think that anybody is coming out of this looking good. I don't think Flick comes out of this situation looking like a good guy. Mm-hmm. I don't think Salihamidzic comes out of this looking like he's, you know, particularly good at his job. And I'm sure that's going to be something that we'll touch on a bit later. The whole thing is very strange because this was, what, 6-7 months ago, Bayern where they were champions of Europe. A few months after that, they were champions of the world. This, in theory, on paper, if you look at this situation of Bayern over the past year, you think everything is going perfectly. Like, there's not a single thing that could go wrong. But then you just take one, like, you take a peek behind the curtain, and all of a sudden there's, like, problems in the boardroom, problems, like, with the manager and his relationship with his bosses. There's arguments that he's having with people. It's really quite... I'm in two minds to say, like, it's both surprising because this is, you know, it's been building for a little while now. But at the same time, it is definitely surprising because it's just astonishing that it's happened in the first place. Mm-hmm. It's incredible.
Yeah. So I think I'm with you on the same page, like both shocking, but also not shocking. There's been rumblings for a bit. It's shocking that there even are rumblings, but I do think that I'm with you. The most surprising thing to me is the manner in which the announcement sort of was made. Hansi Flick, you know, just going to the media, telling his players after the Wolfsburg game, hey guys, this is what's going on, and then going to the media directly after and telling of his intentions. Garrett, do you think maybe there's a bit of Hansi Flick trying to put pressure on the board going on here, or maybe there's, you know, him thinking that if I go to the media first, then surely they'll have to let me out? I mean, I'm just trying to make sense of this decision that he's made here, and hoping maybe you can help me out.
Yeah, I don't. It's really hard to say because, as you guys both kind of mentioned, like it, there's not a whole lot about that Wolfsburg match that you would think now's the time to make that call. We talked about it a little bit where it maybe it was a result of the board being a little bit too relaxed about the whole thing and thinking, oh, we'll work this out, not a big deal. He's just mad. Let him kind of throw his fit and we'll be done with it. And then he does. Flick kind of ends up looking not so good and just kind of interjecting that in a weird spot. But I really do think that it really just has to speak with just his frustration, maybe. Mm-hmm. Because it just sounds like, I mean, you've got Miroslav Klose was saying that there's poor communication between the board and the coaches. One of the other coaches was saying that they're considering leaving because of just the discord between the board and the coaches, and it sounds like it's just this issue that's been festering for a long time, and I think Flick has just had enough, and while I can sympathize with that in a lot of ways, I think you're right, Tim, that no one comes out of this looking like the good guy. They all seem to want to play the professional part when it's like beneficial to them, but then they're happy to throw their fit if they see an opportunity. And it's really sad because you just won every trophy you possibly could, and you're running into a lot of different issues this season with injuries and congested schedule and all those things. And everybody is dealing with it, but there's a lot of adversity that you overcame in the last season that can kind of make this season a little bit easier to swallow. But now with this, it just feels like we're starting from square one again. Now all of a sudden we're back to rumors of Allegri getting tapped as the coach and all these names of guys that I don't think excite very many fans. They mm-hmm. certainly don't excite me. I really think it's just a frustration thing on Flick's part. I think he's just had enough after, you know, two seasons of this.
Right.
And it's just ugly. It's just ugly all around.
Well, even for the past several months, but especially since Hansi Flick has made it his announcement, it's been kind of painted in a few lights, but the media has really taken this sort of narrative that there's a huge divide between Hansi Flick and Hasan Salihamidžić and just run with it and painted it as the main, I guess, catalyst behind his decision to go, which is a little bit odd because, you know, 2 months ago or a month and a half, however long it's been, when Yogi Love announced that he'd be stepping down from the German national team, if you would have found out then that Hansi Flick is for sure leaving, you would think, oh, it's he just wants the Germany job. That's why he's leaving. And so there's those two kind of narratives playing into it. And so, Sebastian, you are sort of closest to this whole situation. What are your thoughts on this? Is this, you know, Hansi Flick just wanting the DFB job and realizing that if he's going to get it, now's his best shot? Or do you really buy into the narrative that there's a big divide between Salihamidžić and Hansi Flick?
I think there actually is this big divide. I cannot really seriously doubt that, I feel. Of course, it's also true that Hansi Flick is probably very interested in the national team job, which is not entirely surprising. But in my opinion, it looks more like this is maybe just making it just that little bit easier to leave. Maybe he would have stayed a moment longer. Maybe it would have taken him a week longer to take this decision. Maybe if the national team job wouldn't be there. But I don't think, well, I wanted to say like it probably wouldn't have changed the outcome, but actually maybe it would have. And this is when I think about it, and this is the really weird thing, because when you talked about is this a surprise or not, I feel like we have to say it kind of is, because I'm pretty sure it was a huge surprise to the club itself. So I don't know, definitely for them. So if there had been like a week or maybe 2 weeks more where Hansi Flick would have waited to take this decision, maybe things would have looked entirely different. And this is maybe what I find the most shocking, because this is not the club I know. This is not how Uli Hoeneß would have run these things when he firmly had the reins, basically. And this definitely has to change, I feel. Because, I don't know, you cannot just get into this situation, basically, without even realizing it properly. And I think this is kind of what happened here. I get the impression that the club was actually really surprised what happened here, and they thought they have this under control. Like, okay, I think their idea was, okay, either we're going to be able to convince Flick, we're maybe 70-80% sure that we're going to convince Hansi Flick to stay, and, well, we're going to find a solution that we can keep both Salihamidžić and Hansi Flick. I think this was the idea, and the kind of the plan B would probably have been talking to Flick, saying, okay, you can leave at the end of the season, but give us some time so we can make some arrangements, so we maybe will be able to come out with our new coach for the new season already, until this becomes public knowledge, basically. I think this was kind of the idea, and this misjudgment of the situation is what I find probably as shocking as just the prospect of what's going to happen next. How are we going to deal with this? Yeah, this is just awful. Oh man, I now get a bit lost on this tangent. I hope I also answered your question. But
yeah, no, definitely. Like you said, there's so much going on here. It is difficult to even like pick one topic and address it because of how much ties into it as well. I guess my thought is, if there was a meeting and they agreed, we're not going to talk about this, we're not going to say anything to anybody until after the Mainz game, and then Hansi Flick goes out and does that, that's a pretty big offense. Like, I guess, Tim, you're probably not less supportive, but you've been less on board the Hansi Flick hype train than the rest of us, probably because of your Niko Kovac sympathies. So I do want to turn to you here, but if that was the case, they decide we're not going to talk about this at all, and Hansi Flick goes out and says that, like, something has to be done to address that, right?
Yeah, I'm not on the board of a multi-million, billion euro, pound, whatever currency you want to talk about. I'm not the sort of person that would make that sort of decision. I'm also a massive coward when it comes to confrontation. However, if I was somebody like Karl-Heinz Rummenigge or Oliver Kahn or even Uli Hoeneß himself or whoever it is, if I was one of those guys that has, you know, that temperament of saying exactly what they think needs to be said, that, like, Hansi Flick, like, undermining this whole thing of saying, oh yeah, by the way, I'm going. And then, like, what was the reports? Like, all of the Bayern staff had turned off their phones. And, like, I've never had my phone turned off. Maybe that's probably why I've never been offered the job at a major organization like Bayern. But I think his move in doing that is just this quite really any other manager, that's a huge problem. Literally any other manager. I saw a great thing on Reddit the other day, which was somebody asking, okay, ignore how last season went. How has this season gone for Hansi Flick? And the general consensus was this hasn't been a good season. And I think that's how, I realize that's, you know, we're still certainly in with a chance of winning the Bundesliga. I think you can almost wrap that up. And like maybe we were dealt a fairly unfortunate blow with the Champions League, but even things like the losses in the cup, like the scrape victories at the end, this hasn't been as wonderful a season as you can expect it to be, or as you would potentially have hoped it to be. And so a lot of the criticism does, in my eyes, have to fall on the manager, because that's what's happened before. And I do think that Hansi Flick is being given quite a lot of leeway because of everything that was achieved last season. In my eyes, if any manager in Bayern's history, whether it's Hitzfeld, Trapattoni, Van Gaal, I mentioned in our chat that Van Gaal and Hoeneß was probably the last big fight that happened between like senior members of the Bayern organization, happened around this sort of time about 10, 11 years ago. It was probably about 10 years ago, actually. But if it was Trapattoni, Hitzfeld, Van Gaal, Guardiola, Kovac, whoever it is, if any of them were to come out and say, oh yeah, by the way, I'm going, without having that prior meeting to say, I would like to do this, I would like to move forward. Okay, cool. Let's make this a public. Let's make it an official announcement. If any other manager had done that without getting that expressed consent beforehand, there would be outrage. Hmm. There would be so much fury and anger. You know, I can vividly remember that image of Uli Hoeneß and Rummenigge storming into the Bayern dressing room after a game that was under Kovac, of course. That's the image that comes to mind. This is a guy that goes out of his way to say, oh, by the way, I'm going, without telling anybody else or without having anything confirmed. That is the sort of thing that deserves, fully warrants criticism in my eyes. And yet, I will be a little bit biased because, you know, I really liked the old guy. I've liked Flick, but what I want to do is to say nobody is free from criticism. Kovac wasn't free from criticism. Flick isn't. Guardiola isn't. Rummenigge isn't. Neuer isn't. All of these people, everybody should be held to account in some capacity. And I think this is an opportunity where he really needs to be held accountable for what he's done.
I think that's fair, except that if you can't not take last season into account, and you also, so you have to kind of think of it as this: if you know, Bayern had been struggling to achieve what they wanted to achieve for, you know, after Guardiola left, 4-5 seasons roughly, and Flick comes in, and immediately everything's better. They're improving. They get 6 trophies, major trophies. And then he's told, no, you still have to play our game. We're still deciding, you know, making the player decisions. You just work with what we give you. And I feel like that's gotta be where the frustration stems from, is this idea that you are just if you're Flick, you're just the guy that we just put out there. We could put anybody out there and achieve the same thing. Just we're picking the players for you. And I think for him, I think the reason that he is happy to just throw that out there, and because you've just seen the decline, the way that he's kind of started out as, you know, like he said he wanted, you know, a right back that first transfer window. And they said, well, he needs to not make comments about the transfer. And he kind of backed off and he kind of said, yeah, okay. You know, I was just saying we need some things and we'll do what we need to do. But it's slowly become more and more like, you just see the frustration that he's having, to where I could see a scenario where he has this meeting and they say, hey, you know, I can just see the board being so dismissive of his frustration. You know, oh, you'll be fine. Not a big deal. We'll just wait till after the Mainz game to talk about this. But he wants to deal with it now. He had just won 6 trophies in a shortened pandemic affected, you know, calendar year, where now you just came off of a situation where a guy won 2 titles and you were upset with him. So what more can he do to get out from under this situation where he doesn't have a say in what players he gets on his squad. He just has to deal with what he has. I totally agree with you that no one's above criticism, and I totally agree that it is kind of a low shady move to kind of come to this agreement that we're not going to talk about this and then go ahead and do it anyway. Because like I said, I don't completely hold Flick blameless in all this. However, I think if it were Heinkes that had just won a bunch of things and they were telling Jupp Heynckes that, hey, don't worry about players. You know, you're still going to be our coach next season, but don't worry about players. We'll just give them to you and you don't have any say. I think that would also be pretty poorly looked on, as far as, you know, what they're doing to a coach that's accomplished so much for them. Now with Heynckes, obviously there's a lot of other history that played into his role with the club and everything. But I just think you can't separate the success that he's had from the fact that he's not being given the kind of input that he feels he should have. And I think that's ultimately what the frustration is.
I would also like to add that when we compare Hansi Flick to a number of his predecessors as managers of Bayern Munich, or as coaches of Bayern Munich, however you want to put it, we need to keep in mind that there were only, I think, 2, maybe if we're generous, there were 3 coaches or managers that had to deal with this state of the board. Because I think we all agree that, broadly speaking, the club has always been in good and firm hands with Rummenigge and, most importantly, Uli Hoeneß. And even with the whole affair, when Hoeneß wasn't able to do his job because of legal issues, there was never a situation where any manager or coach had to deal with all this stuff that has been going on now, except for Niko Kovac and maybe Carlo Ancelotti a little bit. So I think it's pretty unfair to compare. I could imagine that there would have been worse or at least as bad situations with other coaches if they would have had to deal with this situation we're in with the board right now. So yeah, that's just really unfair to compare if we don't also look at these differences, I feel.
Yeah, I think the bottom line, and we've talked about this a little bit, is there really isn't anyone who comes out of this looking great. Like Hansi Flick, whether you agree, disagree with what he's done, you know, there's various factors that play into it. He still doesn't look great. At the end of the day, it's not the best decision and it, from the outside looking in. But I do want to talk about one person, Sebastian, and that's Hasan Salihamidžić, because he's obviously playing, like you said earlier, a key role in everything that's going on here. After all, he's supposed to be the link between Hansi Flick and the board, the link between the players and the board. And I guess my question is, you know, how is he going to come out of all of this? Because I certainly can't imagine he comes out unscathed.
Yeah, I mean, what you outlined there, I think this isn't looking good for him. All these things that you mentioned, having those in mind, it's really not looking good, because obviously the players have not come out saying bad things about Salihamidžić. But I think it is a pretty safe assumption that the team is behind Hansi Flick in this. So he has probably not done a great job making sure there's a good connection here. Like, he's not an intermediary in any way between those. He's more like the outsider in this relationship, it seems. And the same is kind of true for the relationship between the board and the players and so on. So this person that everyone can come to and who's going to make sure everything works, that there are good relationships, this part of his job, he's completely failed. I think this is pretty clear. What he has going for him, of course, is some of the transfer stuff. I think he has played a vital role in youth players showing up on the first team again. And I really don't want to take anything away from him there. I think he has really played a very important role in that. We always talk about how not much has happened since David Alaba and Thomas Müller. And these guys, they are closer to the end of their career now than to the beginning, pretty much. So, yeah, you have to give him credit for that when we look at Alfonso Davies, or when we look at Musiala and so on. So you definitely have to give him some credit there. But yeah, maybe this is not quite the right job for him then, because he's not good with the media. He's like very much a PR guy, a bit of a sleazy PR guy who's going to sell you every nonsense. He's not going to be a straightforward guy. And this is, I think, what fans of the club expect from the board, that there are people who are not afraid to say the truth, who are not afraid to have a strong opinion, and who are not going to sugarcoat stuff. I think that's what we expect. That's why people very much were in favor of Uli Hoeneß. This is also why many people were really in favor of Matthias Sammer. And I think this is kind of what's missing. He's not the right guy for that job, I feel. I could see him in a job that's more on the business side of all this. I'm not saying I would want him to be the next Rummenigge. I'm very happy that this is not going to be him either, because this is just too big of a role for him now anyway. So, but I think this is, there is no balance there anymore. I think there was a good balance when you had Hoeneß, who was for a long time, I think, the more important guy, at least on the football side of things. And then you also had Karl-Heinz Rummenigge, who's good at the business side of things. So this was a good balance, I feel. They worked together very closely, even if they didn't agree on everything, of course. But they kind of balanced each other. And this is, I cannot see this at all right now. So this is a problem. And then, of course, yeah, as I said, he's just, I don't know, is there an English phrase for that? I think in German we say an Elefant im Porzellanladen, so an elephant in the China store, I guess you would say, breaking everything. And this is kind of how I see him in this, right? So he's creating problems because, yeah, he's just a kind of a weird guy in that, maybe. And yeah, I think this is a huge problem there. And I think Bayern really need to very much think about what they're going to do now, because what has happened is going to influence who we're going to get as our next coach, I suppose. Because this is just not looking good for the club. Every guy we're going to approach to be our next manager is going to say, okay, what was that? How are things going to work with us in the future? Like, am I going to get a say with transfers?
Yeah.
is Hasan Salihamidžić going to do these things he's did with Flick, like just going there and saying, okay, now we are not giving Boateng a new contract? Am I going to have to deal with things like that? These are going to be concerns that a potential new manager is going to have. So we really need to make sure that the club gets out of this situation looking more like the Bayern Munich that we all love.
Right.
Again.
Well, and one of the things that you can read it or learn from anybody who is really good at dealing with conflict resolution is that you solve the problem before it even becomes a problem. And in other words, you have to set up those expectations. This is what my role is. This is what your role is. And then that can work. I think the problem is that it seems like they have this rough idea of what they want Salihamidžić to do and what they want the coach to do. But it's clearly not clear enough in that eventually it starts to kind of bleed together. And now all of a sudden, well, you know, we want the coach to have this relationship with the players, but we also don't want him to actually tell us what we need to go get. We'll just go get him and he'll have a little bit of say. You know, we will ask him how he feels about the player, but ultimately it's our choice. And it just, like you said, it just seems like there's not a lot of cohesion from top to bottom. And that's my big concern, is that if you are looking at from a Bayern perspective, you're saying we want to go after a guy of, you know, the caliber or personality of like a Jurgen Klopp. I cannot imagine Jurgen Klopp looking at this situation and saying, yes, I want to be a part of that. I want to be the guy that goes and is told what players I need to work with. And I can just have a little bit of input. That's, you're just not going to have that happen. And I think, by and large, we've already seen kind of how that works out. In that, you know, I think Niko Kovac was kind of in a similar situation where he was kind of okay with being told who to play, but he, or who he was going to have on his squad, but he wanted control over how he played it. And then they didn't want that either. So it's just kind of, it's just such a mess. And that's, I think the way that you described it, Sebastian, is an elephant in the China shop that we call a bull in the China shop. That's the phrase that I'm familiar with. But yeah, it just seems like he wants to be involved in everything that he really shouldn't be because he'll break it. So that's kind of my sense on that.
I think you're both spot on, and especially with the conversation Sebastian brought up about the balance between handling the media, but also keeping the Bayern way. There's a lot missing. I think at the end of the day, Salihamidžić got too much power too soon, doesn't know how to deal with it all, and something's going to have to be addressed if we hope to get back to, you know, where we were about a year ago, or get back to, you know, those types of levels, and especially if we want to get another coach coming in of any sort of caliber, which does lead us naturally into the next question, because whenever you talk about a coach leaving, you naturally get to have the conversation about someone else coming in. And I think Bayern are a little bit lucky with the timing of this, that they are going to have a summer to integrate a new coach. But obviously the question that we have to talk about, Tim, is let's assume Hansi Flick gets what he wants and he does leave in the summer and he does what everyone expects and he goes to the German national team. Who comes in next? Like, who should be brought in? Because there are a few names floating around, but I'm interested, and I'll come to Garrett and Sebastian next. Everyone just kind of quickly share their thoughts. But Tim, who do you think, or who do you want to be coming back in after Hansi, or to come in after Hansi Flick?
Oh, if you're saying coming back in, I'd have to go near Coach.
Yeah, I think that was subconscious coming back. I just knew who you might say. Yeah. But
in terms of like new people getting in, I would jump at the opportunity of somebody like Julian Nagelsmann. I don't know if it's too early for him. I think for what Bayern want to do, or at least what I think Bayern would want to do, is have something that is sustainable for a very long period of time, have somebody that can come in you know, have this sense of tactical flexibility, have experience and being able to have backed up experience like consistently. I think in that sense, it probably is too early for him, because he's not really been around long enough to have any form of consistency. I think what he did at Hoffenheim was hugely impressive. What he's doing at Leipzig is hugely impressive too. I think I would probably say that in terms of like a tactical knowledge, I would say that he is probably a step above Hansi Flick at the moment. Whether that translates to results, that's another story. Whether that translates to players respecting him, again, that remains to be seen. But if you were to take the makeup of Julian Nagelsmann as a manager, and you put that in Hansi Flick, that is a fantastic recipe for success. Obviously, if you then have to remove the body of Hansi Flick, then you just have Julian Nagelsmann there, and that wouldn't be a problem for me at all. But there are, of course, like worries that he is very young. Are the players going to really respect him that much? I'd like to think they would, but who knows?
Yeah, I would have to say I do love the idea of Julian Nagelsmann coming in. I think that there's one other name that I'll get to in a second. If that coach can't come in, I think now is as good of a time as any to go ahead and take a chance on Nagelsmann, see what he can do. But of course, with all the craziness going on right now and Liverpool's determination to make this European Super League happen, and Jurgen Klopp's history of being completely anti-European Super League, I don't want to get my hopes up too much, but I think we could almost have like a perfect storm of events leading to Jurgen Klopp finally coming to Bayern Munich. Now, I think that it's a very slim chance, even if he does leave Liverpool, I imagine he'll want to take at least a year off away from football and get things sorted. But I have to say, man, if Jurgen Klopp can come in, that's the dream for me. If not him, then I would be more than pleased with Julian Nagelsmann taking over from Hansi Flick. So, Garrett, Sebastian, what about you two? Anything different?
I guess I'm not such a huge fan of the idea of getting Nagelsmann now. 5 years from now, he's probably my guy. But I don't know, just dealing with superstars, I'm just not sure if this is the right time. Also, he has been playing a very different kind of system. I also don't know if this translates well to Bayern Munich. So I guess with Klopp, I'm totally on board. I think if we get the chance to get him, that would be great, because he's quite a bit older than Nagelsmann. This has definitely nothing to do with me not being ready for a Bayern coach that's about a year younger than I am. Just get that out of the way, I suppose. But yeah, I think my favorite guy, if Klopp doesn't work, is probably still Erik ten Hag. I think this would also be a good opportunity. I mean, he hasn't sounded like he definitely wants to leave or anything, kind of the opposite. But we are also reading that Ajax has to sell players like, I think, around 40 or 50 million worth of players. This could be a good situation for him to jump ship. I still think that's a good idea. I think he's more a kind of guy who knows the club, who knows what kind of football we're trying to play here, who's probably somewhat better or already used to dealing with superstars, even if not as head coach, maybe, or not as much. Of course, they're also kind of stars at Ajax, but they're also kind of superstars at Red Bull or Rasenballsport Leipzig, of course. But yeah, I think this is... I like that somewhat better, I think. And I guess I also want to mention this weird idea of getting Xabi Alonso. I think it's also kind of too early for him. Just to also bring up his name, because this would be interesting, but maybe also a thing that I would rather do in 3 to 5 years. So for me, Ten Hag, Klopp are probably what I would like more than Nagelsmann. And yeah, the other ones, yeah, I guess Nagelsmann would also be expensive. Yeah. We also have to keep that in mind. He's not going to come for free. This would probably be one of the most expensive manager signings that we have seen. Yeah, this would be more of a gamble, I think. than getting one of the other guys.
Chabi Alonso definitely would be interesting at the very least. So just don't want to comment on that. But Garrett, any thoughts?
Just that I think the only hope of getting Jurgen Klopp is if they decided that they're going to change the way that they do things pretty dramatically and move Salihamidžić to a more of a advisory board role than having an active participation in the dealings of the club on the pitch, which they might do. I mean, for Jurgen Klopp, I think that they would be crazy not to have jump at that opportunity. But I think I kind of lean towards the same opinion as Sebastian with Ten Hag in terms of his understanding of some of the inner workings of Bayern Munich. I think that can only serve him well. I think the fact that he's had some success in the Champions League would be working in his favor as far as being able to get a lot of buy-in from some of the more difficult personalities, or maybe not difficult, but strong personalities on the Bayern roster. And I think that he's also the type of guy that is willing to stick around for a little while. And I know in today's football, it's kind of a pipe dream to expect a coach to be around for longer than 3 years. But I would hope that you could have a guy for 5 to 7 years and actually start building something again. And I think Ten Hag would be a good candidate for that. Not that I don't think Nagelsmann would. I feel like Nagelsmann being so young there's going to be too many opportunities for him to be drawn away by some other clubs that are willing to just splash a ton of money. And not that Ten Hag is old, but I think you know what I'm getting at. But yeah, so I think that'd be kind of who of the names that I'm aware of. I would love Xabi Alonso just because I think he was a superstar player, and I think he's got a great personality for coaching and stuff. But again, I think it's probably too soon. I think he would fit the criteria of not having such a firm belief in what players that they should bring in. I think he would cede that expertise to people further up in the board, and I think that would work really well for them. But I just think it's too early for Bayern.
I think no matter what happens outside of the club will play a big factor into the decision that is eventually made, which gives us a good point of transition. Unless you've been living underneath a rock, and even if you have been living underneath a rock and are somewhat interested in football, you probably already know that on Sunday, a European Super League was announced. It was officially announced after rumors saying, hey, this is about to happen. And so for anyone who might be slightly unfamiliar or who needs a refresh, essentially 12 of Europe's biggest teams, maybe about 8 of Europe's biggest teams and then 4 others, have come together to create what they're calling the European Super League. It's the Big Six, in quotation marks, from the Premier League. Not the 6 best teams in England, mind you, but the Big Six in the Premier League. The 3 big ones from Spain, Barcelona, Real Madrid, Atletico Madrid, and then 3 from Italy, Juventus, and both of the Milan clubs, have all come together saying they want to start a European Super League, and they've drawn up these plans. It's being headed up by Real Madrid's president, Florentino Perez, and it's really just like shocked the world, taking it by storm, because there's been so many talks in the past of this happening, but now it's kind of official. Bayern Munich, thankfully, have taken a firm stance against it. They're saying no to the Super League. We're going to stay with the Champions League. We're going to support what is already in place. We're not just going to be greedy for the money. And so has all of the German teams, all the Bundesliga teams are against it. Paris Saint-Germain, they've also taken a stance against it. And so there's this really big divide going on right now. But I want to sort of frame this conversation about the European Super League, specifically as it relates to Bayern Munich. But that being said, for American listeners, it can kind of be difficult to understand why this is such a bad thing. Like, why wouldn't you want the best teams to play against the best teams all the time? Surely that's going to be the most entertaining thing. And so, Tim, I guess I'll come to you. Why is this such a bad thing for football in general?
Yeah, very good question. There's this. This is really difficult because part of me looks at the Super League and thinks that's an amazing idea. The problem is, like, as you said, the idea of the best teams playing the best teams, fantastic. Like, I was watching something earlier and somebody said, you know, if you get the opportunity to watch Manchester City against Real Madrid or the opportunity to watch United against Burnley, chances are you're going to go for the City Madrid game. And those games will become, you know, commonplace with the implementation of the Super League. I'm very unfamiliar with the ins and outs of it, with the intricacies, and sadly didn't do my homework for this one. But to the best of my knowledge, the reason why it's a problem is because it removes every competition. I think if you look at a team like West Ham or even Aston Villa, for example, who have had such a fantastic season domestically that they could potentially qualify for Europe. I think West Ham have qualified. Well, they're certainly on their way to. They can work really, really hard this season and do very, very well and qualify for Europe. But ultimately, it doesn't really matter because the best teams aren't going to be there. The best teams are going to be in their own separate league. I've had it kind of framed in so many different ways. It's like having the best actors and actresses say, okay, we're not going to go to the Oscars because we're better than that. We're going to have our own one and you guys aren't invited. You can watch, but you're not going to be able to take part. Hmm. So it essentially creates more dominion over something that is already dominated by a select few. In a way, it kind of makes it almost irreversible. So the idea of, I apologize, I realize this is a Bayern podcast. I am talking exclusively in terms of English teams. The concept of a team like Leicester, you know, doing the unthinkable and winning the Premier League and doing it in such marauding fashion and everybody's behind it and it's this fairy tale story and everybody is so excited about it. The fact that that just becomes like, oh yeah, well, Leicester won it because where's the other competition? Everybody's gone. They're in this other competition. It kind of dilutes any sense of intrigue, of conflict, of competition. I think Guardiola said something earlier today, again, somebody from an English football team. And he said that football, like sport without competition isn't sport. And that's kind of what I believe. Is the issue with the Super League. As I said, I'm not completely familiar with the entire situation. It's a very difficult thing to understand. All I know is that it sounds like an amazing idea, but it comes at not just a detriment, it comes at a huge detriment to teams that are like lower down in the leagues that mm-hmm. get neglected, that don't get any of that funnel. And instead, everything kind of settles in this pool right at the top of, as you said, the 12 biggest teams in the world. I think most of which drew 1-1 against lower league teams this past weekend. But obviously, that's just one game and, you know, these things happen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is certainly like the biggest thing that's happened in football in my lifetime. And I really have no idea what's going to happen. All I know is that I'm not, you know, in a way it doesn't affect me, but in another, like I can still sleep at night.
Right.
It's like as best I can anyway. But it removes any sense of like community,
mm-hmm,
of,
for sure,
of like regionality, of everything that kind of makes football so great like the whole like, oh, support your local team, like all of that. Granted, none of us do that, except like Sebastian's probably got the best claim for doing that here.
Yeah.
So it's just a huge shame.
Sebastian, I know you're about to...
No, you can ask any of my German friends. It's a pretty weak claim. I would like to add and just to specify a bit more about that, I guess. I think the biggest problem here is that there are like going to be a 15 plus 5. This is extremely weird because there are going to be like 15 teams in this league and they are going to decide everything. And then they kind of expect some other teams to come to their exclusive club and kind of be there for a year or something. If this league is actually going to take off and if this is actually going to work, and if like Champions League gets cancelled, which would be the only thing that makes sense, if there would be a kind of a different competition apart from it, but not quite Champions League, like there would probably be, I mean, this is pure fantasy at this point, because not even the people who set up this or are setting up this Super League, I think, even know or have communicated how they think this is supposed to work in competition with UEFA and so on. So you're going to have these 15 teams and they are going to decide everything. Who's going to officiate these games and who's going to make sure that there's like no cheating involved? I mean, I don't trust these people. Do I want a league basically run by Real Madrid and they're like, no,
absolutely not.
Definitely not. Right. And it's just so extremely unfair to have these other teams who are kind of on the outside now. Everton, for example, which I kind of like as another team, not as much as Bayern, of course, but I kind of sympathize with them, for example, or Monaco, maybe, or I don't know, other teams, of course. The teams from Portugal, for example, Porto, Benfica, and so on, those are great teams. Why should they lose out? Why should there be six English teams in there? How is that fair at all? I think who would like that? Nobody would like that. They are just, I think people would hate this less if it would just be 20 teams and that's that. It would still be awful, but I think this kind of makes it worse, that they kind of expect those other teams to kind of play along with their bullshit. I don't know. It's not like the NFL, because to take this example, because it's not like there are these other hundreds of teams in the US who suddenly find themselves on the outside of this, right? So this is just some of those teams of this whole European world of football just decide, so we are the bosses now,
right?
We make the rules now, and either you play according to our rules or you're out, you're going to lose. And this is just offensive in every kind of way, right?
Yeah, it's ridiculous. And I think that it does show, I guess, kind of how important it is for Bayern to, I guess, stand against it, not only just for the values of keeping football competitive, which I know some people may think sounds ironic when we're talking about Bayern Munich, but somebody has to stand up and say, hey, this isn't the way to move forward. We're removing all competition for the game. We're saying, hey, we're the best. We're only going to play each other, and you should consider yourself lucky, like you said, to be able to come play against us. It's ridiculous. It's a money grab. And if I'm being honest, I it's not very well thought out. Surely someone in those meetings, right, between those 12 clubs would have said, hey, just so you know, nobody that is a fan of football wants this to happen, right? And they just come out and they're acting like everyone's going to be in this, you know, huge support for it all of a sudden. And even as we're recording right now, there's several reports saying that Chelsea want out of the contract they signed to get into the Super League. And I think a big factor in that has to be the fact that there's, you know, hundreds and thousands of fans outside of Stamford Bridge right now protesting just because of how ridiculous of an idea this is. So, I mean, it's incredibly just poor taste, out of touch, completely out of touch with what any football fan, player, coach in the world wants. An absolute money grab, and yeah, just... I don't even know what to say, Garrett.
But Ben, to save football, you just have to break all the eggs except your own.
Yeah, honestly, apparently
that's that's the pitch is that they're saving football, because they've lost a ton of money, and so they need to make more. I think the thing that because I am one of the Americans that kind of struggled to wrap my head around this whole concept, because to me it sounds a lot like MLS in terms of like, here's all these teams that we're in the top league and you can't really get in, except for, you know, here's some caveats, you know, you can't play your way in, in the MLS, you have to pay your way in, but, and that's probably unfair to MLS, but whatever. But like then for Perez yesterday had said something like, well, it's not a closed league. We got five spots that are open up for anybody to make it in and play the best teams in the world. And,
like Arsenal.
And I think that, like Arsenal or Tottenham. And I think that's, again, it seems so short-sighted because like you said, Tim, like people will be like, well, would you rather watch Real Madrid, Man City, or, you know, West Ham versus Burnley? And it's like, well, yeah, I would like to watch Man City versus Real Madrid now, but if I had to watch that every year for 7 years, you know, multiple times, well, it might lose its luster a little bit too. And I think that the reason that Champions League is so exciting, and granted, I understand that they're trying to revamp it and make some changes because apparently they're losing viewership or whatever. But I think the reason that, especially from an American perspective, the reason we love that is because you are getting to test yourself. Your team's getting to test itself against the other good teams, but the problem with the Super League thing is that all these teams, you know, yeah, we joke like Arsenal, you know, ha, they're not one of the best 15, but if they're getting, you know, 300 billion euros every year from this thing, like they're talking like, I don't know if that's the right number, but they're getting just a load of money every single year. Well, yeah, then they will become one of the best teams again. Mm-hmm. And all these other clubs that have no access to that, you know, even in theory, now all of a sudden, what are they going to do? So those six teams from the English league are constantly going to be at the top, and there's no chance of a Leicester City, sort of situation. It is. I mean, one of the things that I just love, or that drew me to soccer, is the fact that there's all these regional teams, like that, these smaller clubs that have, in theory, the potential. There's a lot of things working against them, sure, but they have the potential and the theoretical ability to rise to the top level, and, you know, you got your Bournemouths and you have, you know, teams like that. And I feel like that it becomes just pointless or even impossible for some of these clubs. And they just become farm teams for the 15 clubs that don't have to worry about being kicked out of the top competition in the world. And so it's hard to kind of wrap my mind around it because, you know, like you and I, Ben, we've never lived in that kind of soccer culture. But at the same time, like, I don't have to look very hard at this to see, like, this seems like a really bad idea, mm-hmm. And a tough sell to even other clubs.
Yeah. And I think Pep Guardiola, which is kind of surprising, him being the coach of Man City, but he's just about said it best. It's not sport if it doesn't matter if you lose. And I think that the most prestigious coach in all of the world saying that from a club that has agreed to sign up for this competition kind of more or less says it all. It'll be interesting to see how this competition develops, if it even goes through. It's already showing signs of imploding. Nobody wants this to happen. Players, coaches, fans, the only people that want it to happen are the owners. Chelsea's already looking for their way out. Damage may too much damage may have already been done. I hope UEFA and FIFA really stick to their guns, especially with him saying, you know, if this goes through, players that play in this competition can't compete in a FIFA or UEFA competition. I hope they stick to that. And I hope that this just gets reverted. And honestly, any club that signed up for it, I'd be more than happy with them receiving all the ramifications that they would be receiving, even if it did go through.
The funny thing, by the way, is that European laws, European antitrust laws, are maybe the most important thing standing in the way of UEFA actually stopping this, because there needs to be competition according to European rules between like people who organize football tournaments, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
This is so ironic that something that's so anti-competition might be saved, I guess, by rules that are supposedly there to have competition on the market. This is just so weird.
Well, and it's another one of those situations where it's like, I think maybe the worst thing about this whole thing is that it has me like defending UEFA. Like, we're at its place where it's like, wait, I have to side with UEFA and FIFA and Qatar or this. And it's like, How dare you do this to me?
Mm-hmm. I think no matter what, we're kind of specifically stuck right now in a bit of a wait and see kind of moment. See either how this league develops or how it falls apart. At the end of the day, I think we're all in agreement that we're proud as Bayern fans that the club has said, no, we want no part in this. As a matter of fact, we're going to take a step further and do what we can to make sure something like this doesn't happen. And so, as Bayern fans, it's you know, good to be able to stand beside your club and say, hey, from top to bottom, we're all against this, and you know, we stand up with our club.
You can cut this out if we go too long, but I was talking with one of my coworkers who's a Man United fan, and he's actually considering no longer supporting the club because it's like, well, if it doesn't happen, then great. But my club still really wanted this to happen. And do I want to support a club that's probably going to keep looking to do this? And I'm really interested to know how many people are like that, where they're willing to just completely abandon this club that they've supported for, you know, for some people years and years and years.
Yeah.
Because they have completely just abandoned any idea of competition. And I think that's going to be a really interesting fallout from this, even if it doesn't get off the ground.
Well, that's kind of the same thing with the whole World Cup in Qatar. Like, when it was announced, everybody was just like, well, I'm not watching that. I'll boycott that. It's in a couple of years. I guarantee everybody's going to be watching it. Like, is it Field of Dreams? If you build it, they will come. If there's football, people will watch it. I think people are saying like, oh, I'm not going to support this team for like maybe like likes and clicks on Twitter. Some people probably will follow through with it, and fair play to them, like all power to that.
And that's the thing that I really hope that people do take some sort of an actual stand. Don't just be about talk or expect someone else to take care of this for you. Like, if you're like, for the people that are really legitimately concerned about the way that this, you know, Qatar World Cup example is, you know, this whole thing, well, then do not watch it. Do not support it. And because the thing is people that are driving these decisions know that, you know, even with the Super League, they know there's a good chunk of fans that are going to look at this and say, well, I hate this, I hate this, I hate this, but I can't help but watch.
Mm-hmm.
And if you stop watching, well, now all of a sudden, not only are they not getting those, you know, the support from you specifically or all the people, they're also not going to get sponsorships because no one's watching them. But that's where it's like, it's going to take some skin off our own backs to really fight this type of stuff. And sometimes that means that you're just going to have to
completely disconnect yourself. And I don't know how many people are willing to do that. I'm glad that Bayern, I don't have to worry about that with this issue. I know there's other issues that we kind of discuss about, you know, shady dealings with the club and everything, but these are things that we have to think about, I think.
Yeah, I think that's the perspective right there is, you know, if this was Bayern going into it, it would be incredibly hard to just say, okay, well, then I'm not going to watch Bayern. That's an incredibly difficult decision to make. Luckily, we don't have to make that, but it'll be interesting to watch this develop and see what this turns into. But I think that is a good stopping point for today's episode, so we'll wrap it up there. If you've enjoyed listening, if you've stuck with us this far, made it through a extra long episode, thank you for that. But if you've enjoyed listening or you are a regular fan of the podcast and you haven't done this already, please do us a favor and leave us a 5-star review. We'd greatly appreciate that. If you want to get in touch with us, there are a couple ways that you can do that. You can email us at superbayernpod@gmail.com, or you can follow us on Twitter at superbayernpod and get in touch with us there. All of our episodes can be found on Spotify, Apple, wherever you listen to your podcast. We're probably going to be there. Thank you for listening. Go out and tell your friends, and we'll talk to you next time.